This week on Making Contact.
We knew that people were using improperly disposing of syringes and quite possibly sharing syringes. And no one seemed to be wanting to do anything.
Needle exchange programs began springing up in the 1980s during the AIDS crisis. Countless lives have been saved by providing IV drug users with clean needles. But even now, with hundreds of programs across the U.S. and throughout the world, some states still view distributing needles as illegal.
If there was probable cause to effect an arrest, we may arrest.
This week, WABE reporter Jim Burris takes us to The Bluff, a neighborhood in Atlanta where a needle exchange program, breaking the law every day, has become a vital part of a struggling community. I'm Andrew Stelzer. Stay tuned for Making Contact.
Looking at Darlene, I think to myself, this could be my mother.
Hi. I'm Jim.
We're only using her first name. The 63-year-old heroin addict just dropped into the Westside duplex where the Atlanta Harm Reduction Coalition, or AHARC, is based.
Everything's legal, right?
Yeah. Well,
somebody could come run in here and arrest me for it. I'm not worried about it.
Darlene is surprisingly comfortable talking about her drug use. No one will come in and arrest us, although police could. Darlene is here to exchange dirty needles for clean ones. And that's illegal in Georgia.
Well, these are syringes. If you shoot drugs, you have to have them. And they don't last very long. And after a while, you need to replace them. And you also have to be careful you don't borrow them because you can get AIDS. Very dangerous.
When you say you have to replace them, how many times would you use a single needle?
You'd like to only use it once, because after that it starts getting dull. But you can use it like two or three times if you have to.
Darlene and her husband have driven nearly 4 hours to get here from the East Tennessee town where they live. It's a journey they make about once a month. At any point on that trip, the small black sack Darlene clutches could get her arrested. It cradles 100 used syringes, give or take. Works, they're called on the street. In the courts, the term is paraphernalia. Sometimes Darlene will take extras back to Tennessee to give to fellow users. There's no needle exchange there.
How long have you been using?
I was 40 when I started. My husband started in Vietnam. He's been doing it, 40 years that he's been a heroin addict? But I just started when I was 40. And I began due to a medical problem. You know, that's another thing, too. The doctors will not prescribe you decent painkillers. They give you what I call aspirin, really. But if you have bad pain, and I have post-polio syndrome, so I'm in constant pain, I needed something for pain, and the doctors wouldn't give it to me, and a so-called friend turned me on to heroin, saying that it would help, and it did, you know, but the flip side of that is you end up with a habit.
Once a day, Darlene and her husband shoot heroin, twice if they can afford the $40 each. Nothing about that habit, as she calls it, is good for her, and she understands that. But even with clean needles, Darlene tells me the drugs cut, what dealers add to dilute the heroin, that remains the bigger threat.
How do you know when you get a bad cut?
Well, you end up with holes in your arms, things like that.
She points to a round red lump on her skin. The concealer makeup she's applied only hides so much. On close look, her arms resemble a pincushion.
Infections, a lot of times you suddenly don't feel good, and you can tell you've done something bad a lot of different ways, depending on what it is.
This happen often?
Yeah. Unfortunately, now it does. Mm-hmm.
How many needles did you bring today?
105.
What's the zip code?
378.
After giving her zip code for tracking purposes, Darlene turns over the bag she's clutched this entire time. Those 105 used insulin syringes come rolling out to create a mound of clear and orange plastic. AHARC Outreach Coordinator Verna Gaines uses kitchen tongs wrapped in duct tape to count out the needles. Two by two, the tongs push the syringes into a red plastic tub marked biohazard. It's the size of a dorm room refrigerator. It's nearly full. After this, Darlene has one more stop. Two blocks east, one north. Cameron Alexander at James P. Brawley could be the roughest intersection in all of Atlanta. Around here, people call it the Bluff. 30. Some say it's the largest open-air heroin market in the U.S. Darlene will make her buy and hope the police don't stop her. And in a few minutes, AHARC will park its mobile outreach RV on that same corner.
Okay. We have got to pack up to go. We got clients waiting. Okay? Right. So y'all going to follow? We're just going to pack our RV up.
There's nothing fancy about the Atlanta Harm Reduction Coalition. A gutter hangs off the rear of the building. The porch light swings by its wires. Volunteers cart out boxes full of Triscuits, foam cups, cracked pipe holders, tiny cotton balls used to filter cut from heroin, paper towels, condoms, cold Pizza Hut pizzas, and more than 1,000 brand new, in the box, ready for use syringes. One Georgia law about to be broken 1,000 times.
Like I said, if you take a look around, that one's abandoned. That one's abandoned. These two on this side are abandoned.
Atlanta Harm Reduction Coalition staffer Marshall Ranzifer wants me to see the neighborhood, his neighborhood. So instead of riding in the Winnebago, we walk the three blocks.
This is the most blighted neighborhood in the city. There hadn't been any economic development in this neighborhood since I was a child. And I'm 57 years old. Today.
The neighborhood itself looks abandoned until we approach the heart of the Bluff. What strikes me is how many people there are.
Some of them are addicts in active addiction. Some of them are selling drugs. Some of them are selling sex. Some of them are just coming home from work, you know. We got a variety of folks in this neighborhood. We got one guy that stands in front of the barbershop every day, all day. And he rides a little moped, and he sells heroin like it's nobody's business. You know, you'll see him when we get up here. Hey, fellas.
Marshall knows everyone here.
How y'all doing?
They trust him.
I feel like when I walk in the neighborhood, I feel like I just walked into the bar with chills because everybody knows my name. And I mean everybody. Ain't everybody ready?
AHARC's mobile unit passes, arriving just about when we do. Maybe 20 people are gathered on the corner, standing in front of a church that once was. It's now little more than a tall stone wall, crumbled, like a bomb blew it apart from the inside. As AHARC folks unload food and chairs, plastic storage bins full of condoms and drug filtering kits and foldable tables, the conversation is everyday, mundane. And people are hungry. One man reaching into the bread bin with his bare hands, it's about the extent of the day's disruptions. And while the food is clearly appreciated, it is not why most people are here.
Give me that.
Claude is a middle-aged African-American man wearing a white undershirt and gray sweatpants. Anything AHARC's Marshall Ranzifer offers, Claude accepts. Rubber ties to plump up his veins for injection, citric acid, which breaks down heroin into individual molecules, apply a flame, and the process necessary to inject the drug happens quicker.
Oh, hey, how you doing?
I'm good.
Hi.
You
all right? 9234.
Claude rattles off the last four of his social security number as he boards the Winnebago. He knows the drill. Claude plops down 15 used syringes as AHARC's Verna Gaines uses her tongs, the ones wrapped in duct tape, to push the needles into a biohazard bin. She passes him 20 clean ones. Claude is in and out of the RV in 40 seconds.
All right, thanks, sir.
All right, have a good
Y'all have a blessed day now.
Right.
Yeah, okay, bye.
I stop him on the sidewalk just as he steps out.
I get my works, my needles and stuff, and then give me my cotton balls, alcohol pad, whatever I need to do what I need to do.
And what would you do if they weren't here?
I normally have to go find somebody to buy them off of them, off the street.
How much on the street would a works cost?
$15. In some places, mostly you can get them for $5, but some people charge $15. Especially if it's late at night. Nobody else have any.
You're in a situation like that, I mean, did you pay the $15?
Yeah, you paid $15, yeah. Yeah, the only choice you have, you but to pay it.
You mind my asking what drugs you use?
Heroin, cocaine, speedball.
Pretty easy to get out?
Yeah, mm-hmm, easy, real easy. Every corner. Woman or either man, it don't matter.
Now, for the first few minutes, Claude tells me his story from the perspective of a heroin user. I look into his eyes, which look like floating marbles. He is functional, but it is clear he is under the influence. Claude is also an opportunist.
As long as you keep them, you don't throw them away. You keep them, then you sell them. But sometimes I need money to get me some heroin, I sell them. See what I'm saying? I sell at least one pack, and I keep a pack. I always keep a pack to bring in, but I know I can bring in 10 wood and get 2 pads back.
$5 each, or are you a $15
man? No. I try to help them to help me, you know what I mean?
Claude is selective in those he helps. If I wanted him to help me score some boy, call it heroin and you're instantly suspect, well, then I'm suddenly a business opportunity. He's going to help himself.
Well, you'll come through like you don't know. Most of the white people come through, they say, well, I got $50. I sell you a dime bag for $50. You'll take it, you don't know. But what I do, I tell you that's a quarter. So you buying you a quarter, you buying me a quarter. So that's $50. Well, I don't gain $40, you just gain 10. Because you don't know.
So you'd smile if you saw
that. Yeah, mm-hmm. It happened every day.
What about the police?
Very seldom. They come through, ride through, that's it. Look, keep on going. A lot of them, you ain't bothering them, they ain't bothering you.
Over the course of several hours, I do see a few Atlanta Police patrol cars drive by. They do not stop, and the activity seems to go on as if they weren't there. Claude tells me there's enough business here for everyone. Generally, everyone gets along. If there is friction, he says it's between old and young, or from outsiders passing through who end up staying.
The bluff will suck you in. You come through here, it might be riding through, and I meet my partner, see my partner one time. Hey, man, come on, we can start getting high. Next thing I know, I'm spending everything I got. And then I'm pawning my car. I'm pawning my jewelry. I'm pawning my watches. And then next thing you know, there I am. I ain't got no more money. What I'm going to do? I'm stuck in the bluff, you know? I ain't got no way out.
IV drug use, heroin, the bluff. A person you're about to meet is going to ask you to put aside those problems because they're not the problem.
You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. Because of generous support from listeners like you, this show is distributed for free to radio stations in the U.S., Canada, Australia, and South Africa. To find out how to donate, download shows, or get our podcasts, go to radioproject.org. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Our handle is making_contact. We now return to Stuck in the Bluff, a documentary produced by Jim Burris at WABE Radio in Atlanta.
16-13-32, subsection C. It shall be unlawful
for any person or corporation other
than a licensed pharmacist, a pharmacy intern, or pharmacy extern,
as defined in Code Section 26-4-5,
or a practitioner licensed to dispense dangerous drugs, to sell, lend,
rent,
give, exchange, or otherwise distribute
to any person a hypodermic syringe or needle designed
or needle designed or marketed primarily for human use.
It shall be an affirmative defense
that the hypodermic syringe
or needle was marketed for a legitimate medical purpose.
I am staking my personal freedom, my livelihood, AHARC's very existence.
Mona Bennett is the executive director of the Atlanta Harm Reduction Coalition.
On trying to stop the spread of HIV, viral hepatitis, especially hepatitis B, hepatitis C, any other bloodborne pathogen. I feel like that is legitimate, medical, and purposeful.
For our interview, she wears a black baseball cap covered in political statements, buttons that read, "Action equals life." Got condoms? She's also attached to that hat actual condoms. When it comes to HIV, Mona Bennett is not shy, and she's never been.
We're going to get in the time machine and go back in the day to, oh, the early 90s. I was a member of ACT UP Atlanta, AIDS Coalition to Unleash Power, a direct action AIDS advocacy group. We were making sure that people living with HIV and AIDS were being treated with dignity and respect, and also helping to get the latest HIV medications into people's bodies that much quicker.
Much of that action took place in Midtown, where drugs were prevalent and syringes littered the streets. By this time, science had proven blood as a means of transmitting the virus. Mona saw the writing on the sidewalk.
We knew what that meant. We knew that people were using improperly disposing of syringes and quite possibly sharing syringes. We knew something had to be done. And no one seemed to be wanting to do anything.
At least when it came to needle exchange. AIDS as a public health crisis was something the state understood. Mona says there was a group working on the front lines, STAR.
Street Team for AIDS Risk Reduction. They were a state group, and they were state employees who were former drug users. They were going out to their old playmates and playgrounds, distributing bleach, distributing condoms, distributing information on how to clean syringes.
Members of the state-funded group could tell people how to clean a needle, but because of Georgia's paraphernalia law, they couldn't actually hand out new ones.
So they were happy to make our acquaintance. They taught us how to do street outreach, and away we went.
Like a child sets up a front yard lemonade stand, AHARC set up a needle exchange table in Little Five Points. Two people showed up. Apparently, police had busted a huge drug operation in the neighborhood just a few weeks prior. People told them the trade had moved west. Bennett and the others followed, eventually finding themselves in the English Avenue corridor, the Bluff. Bennett says it was just her, alongside a bunch of white women from the Emory University Rollins School of Public Health.
Quite frankly, we puzzled the police. We were in this high-intensity drug trafficking area, yet we were neither buying nor selling anything.
But they were breaking the law. They are breaking the law. The day I tagged along with AHARC, I saw two APD patrol cars pass by the mobile exchange. Maybe two dozen people stood on the sidewalk, many clutching a cache of used needles in plain sight. Police said nothing, although one officer waved. Lieutenant Rick Mason commands APD's narcotics unit. I asked him what he would do if he saw AHARC's needle exchange in action. His answer was a question to me.
What actually makes them exchanging needles for fresh ones illegal?
You have to be a licensed pharmacist under the law.
To provide needles or exchange needles? Okay. I was not aware of that. Would we enforce that law? If there was probable cause to effect an arrest, we may arrest.
Lieutenant Mason says street officers could use the law to help identify drug dealers and users. But for him, as a narcotics officer, he says the needle exchange provision doesn't provide much benefit from an enforcement standpoint.
We don't enforce this because we have so many other felony charges that it's almost like stacking charges to put a small misdemeanor mixed in with all of our felony cases and send it off to the complaint room.
A year and a half ago, APD made a bust near the Bluff. 323 grams of heroin, street value, that's about 40 grand. But APD incident reports obtained under the Georgia Open Records Act show in a two-year period, there were only a handful of reports related to syringe possession in the zone that includes the Bluff. A prominent Atlanta criminal defense attorney tells me he's never seen someone prosecuted under the needle exchange portion of the statute. The law passed in 1978. Since, there have only been two published court cases that mention the needle exchange portion of the law, and neither really have anything to do with actual needle exchange. Given what I'd learned, I wanted to ask lawmakers if it's time to revisit the needle exchange provision. Any change would have to pass both the House and the Senate. There's a good chance the bill would land on State Senator Renee Unterman's desk. The Gwinnett County Republican chairs the Senate Health and Human Services Committee. She tells me she helped found the HIV AIDS service organization Aid Gwinnett in the early 90s. So this public health argument behind needle exchange resonates.
But I am aware of the program. It is very controversial because there's a fine line, because are you promoting drug usage or are you preventing other communicable diseases? But there has not been a bill, to my knowledge, that's been introduced.
And there is no push for such a bill. One Republican lawmaker who works in the medical field told me off the record he's sympathetic. He said he might even support the legislation, except it's an election year. And going out front on an issue like needle exchange is, as he put it, political suicide. But it's a question other states have faced. In 2010, Colorado changed its paraphernalia law to allow the practice. As reporter Maeve Conran reports from Denver, that change hasn't put the controversy to bed.
Santa Fe Boulevard is Denver's up-and-coming arts district. Visitors and residents take in galleries, theaters, and coffee shops. But weekdays, this area attracts a different crowd. Drug users show up here at the Denver Harm Reduction Center to stock up. Ruth Knatzer is the center's syringe access director.
Yeah, when you first walk in the door, the first thing that you see is a shelf full of all different types of supplies, accoutrements.
Supplies like alcohol swabs, germicidal hand wipes, and even aluminum caps to cook heroin in. Aside from the high risk of hepatitis C and HIV transmission, bacterial infections can lead to multiple hospitalizations for an injection drug user. Eliminate those, and the savings to the public health system are in the hundreds of thousands of dollars for a single drug user. Center Director Lisa Ravel says it's that cost-saving argument that garnered bipartisan support for Colorado's exemption to drug paraphernalia law.
It all went down to the money. For people that are living with HIV now, they live for about 25 years. That's potentially $300,000 to $600,000 of taxpayer money for medication, doctor's visits, ER visits, that sort of thing. My needles cost a dime.
Senator Carroll?
Aye.
Senator Lundberg?
No.
Senator Mitchell?
Yes.
After failed attempts at similar legislation in 1997 and 1998, Colorado lawmakers passed Senate Bill 189 in 2010.
And what was great for us is that we had physicians speaking on behalf. We had 13 people that would testify both in the Senate and the House, and we had zero opposition. So that was really particularly powerful for us, and being able to find the bipartisan support that it's good public health. 35 states and 60 countries were doing this. We were not being revolutionary. We were really just trying to hurry up and catch up with the rest of good public health.
But Ravel and other public health officials pushing for the law had to compromise to get Republicans on board. The original legislation exempted health workers from prosecution for distributing syringes, but still criminalized the drug users for possession of a needle, clean or dirty.
One of the issues that we did have in 2010, though, is when you continue to criminalize the syringe, it almost promotes improper syringe disposal. That's why it was so important to get participants exempt from the paraphernalia law.
An amendment that exempted drug users from prosecution passed in Denver and statewide. But to avoid prosecution, drug users must be enrolled in a syringe exchange program.
Currently in Denver, if you are not participating in one of the two syringe access programs, you can catch 8 to 15 days in county jail per syringe, clean or used. We do not need to be criminalizing something that can save people's lives.
This syringe exchange program has been operating for less than 2 years, so it's too soon for public health officials to gather significant health statistics. The Harm Reduction Center has been doing 3-month follow-ups with their participants, and Ravel says they've seen improvements in Hep C and HIV transmission rates.
We know that our folks test relatively low for HIV and hepatitis C, so we want to prevent and eliminate that transmission because we're trying to make a healthier and safer Denver.
In October, Denver City Council lifted the restriction that kept exchanges 1,000 feet away from schools and childcare centres. Outreach workers can now walk around the city and exchange needles with users on the streets, something Ravel and other public health workers welcome.
The Denver Harm Reduction Coalition operates on $265,000 a year. $100,000 of that goes directly to needle exchange. In 2012, the budget for the Atlanta Harm Reduction Coalition was $320,000. Members handed out 61,000 clean needles. Last year, the budget dropped to $120,000. This year, Executive Director Mona Bennett doesn't talk in terms of annual budgets. It's month to month.
It is still rough for us. It's always been a hard sell for us because we're not dealing with kittens and puppies and infants.
AHARC is dealing with active drug users and dealers, people who sell sex, the homeless, those with untreated mental conditions who act out in what Bennett calls odd and disturbing ways. She doesn't sugarcoat any of this, and as we talk, my mind keeps going back to Claude. Remember, he's the heroin addict who also sells the drug, and he'll even sell you one of those free needles he picks up from AHARC's exchange. At some level, in some way, isn't AHARC enabling him?
Yes, I'm an enabler. I am enabling people to live. I am enabling people to make healthier, wiser decisions. So yes, I claim that enabling. People talk about tough love and hitting rock bottom. All too often these days, rock bottom is at the bottom of a 6-foot grave. Dead people don't 12-step. Dead people don't get into alcohol and drug treatment centers. Let's keep people alive. Where there's breath, there's hope.
In a place where hopelessness is often a life sentence, AHARC staffers never lose sight of the person at the end of the addiction. There are success stories. Back in AHARC's Winnebago, I witnessed the potential start of one in the form of a middle-aged woman named Beverly.
You know, you tell me when I'm ready and you know, just call yourself. You've helped me like, before and got me into recovery.
And I'll help you again. So, when you're ready, I'm ready, okay?
Okay. Are you scared?
No. I'm happy. I'm excited.
Beverly has been here before. 3 times, she says, she's gone into treatment and relapsed. Maybe she'll succeed on this 4th try. Maybe it'll take 5 or 6. But if a clean needle can keep Beverly from contracting HIV until she beats the addiction for good, Mona Bennett says she'll keep supplying those syringes. At least that's the hope. AHARC's had to cut back on the number of needles it hands out from more than 1,000 per outreach in October to about 600 now. Bennett says the Syringe Fairy is providing those. She says the organization has funding through March, but after that, there's no guarantee they can keep the Winnebago running or the doors open.
That's it for this edition of Making Contact. You've been listening to Stuck in the Bluff, a documentary produced by Jim Burris at WABE Radio in Atlanta in collaboration with Creative Loafing. To see photos from the Bluff neighborhood or learn more about the groups mentioned in this show, check out our website, radioproject.org. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Our handle is making_contact. I'm Andrew Stelzer. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.